Welcome back to the Everything Property Podcast. Now, it wasn't until a few minutes ago when he joined me in the studio did I know that this guy actually existed in real life. If you haven't seen him on his popular YouTube channel, you may have heard him on a podcast or even read one of his books featured in the studio today for those watching on YouTube. But Mr. Steve Polisi from Polisi Property, welcome to the Everything Property Podcast. How are you?
I'm good, man. Thanks for having me in. Really pumped about this.
Yeah, no, good, good. I've been listening for quite a while to all your content, so it's good to see you in the flesh. I know you've been living overseas and stuff like that, which we'll get into a bit later. But I suppose the first and foremost is for those sort of listening and haven't done the research that I've done about you and your books and all your podcasts and everything, is tell us sort of a little bit about how you start, because your beginnings are in sort of engineering, mechanical engineering and stuff like that, and then you find yourself in the commercial buyer's agent space. So let's string the two together and talk to me sort of about your engineering days and then the transition into building a property portfolio.
Yeah, so I've always loved numbers. I got like fourth in the state in 4-unit mathematics and like a really high school mark, 99.5.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Jesus, so okay, you're smart.
Yeah. Without like being arrogant, I had the choice of, do I go medicine? Do I do actuary? Do I do engineering? And then at that time I was like, if you're smart and work hard, you make good money. So mm-hmm. I went into engineering thinking it paid really well.
Yep.
As you kind of know.
Yeah, how did you find it?
It doesn't pay. It pays. This is a problem with engineering. It pays well enough that you don't want to leave, but never next level thing. So you always get stuck in that like six figure, like kind of range of like 100 to 200K.
Yeah.
So I went and did mechatronics at university because I wanted to design like robotic limbs and do all like medical devices.
Wow.
Finished that. Started actually doing that and then realized I hate sitting at a computer typing code for 10 hours a day. And then arrogantly again, just went and chased the dollars a little bit. So I went into like mining, started designing mine sites. So like steel structures, crushers, grinders, minerals processing plants and things
like
that.
Is this when you did it a little bit for yourself, right? You worked for a couple of guys first up and then you're running your own gig, if I've done my research.
I had a
owner.
Yeah, I had an owner for my own thing, but that was just a consulting one. Okay. So this is just hustle Steve. Instead of packing shelves at Coles, which I did during university, I also worked like 6 till 10 p.m. at night doing consulting for other companies, just contracting work where you get paid like $80 an hour. You do that. So did that while I was doing engineering, running myself into the ground.
Perfect.
And then in that, I started following like the gurus, like the old like Nathan Birch's and the Zaki Amir's. And
the young
guys that had the big 50 plus portfolios and that, and then you're sitting there in like your cubicle at work being like, why am I doing this? What am I doing? So then followed their kind of like methodology of go buy a really cool cash flow positive property.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just coincidentally, I lived in Parramatta and then bought in Blacktown, which is a suburb kind of next over, slightly lower socioeconomic. Bought a little house there for $230,000.
That was your first purchase?
First purchase.
How far back are we talking?
2012.
Yep. Okay,
so
wow.
What's that?
11 years ago, yep.
And then that was when the Sydney market took off. So luck had a part of it. Like I claimed, like even though I researched for a couple of years and read all the books and listened to the podcast and that, it was just timing the market. I got lucky. And then that got that revalued at like $320,000 a year later. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, I've just made up like $100,000. From signing a piece of paper and doing nothing, and then pulled out the money, and I was just like, well, for me to earn $100,000, I have to work, like I was on like $65,000 a year at the time. I have to work like 5 years to even get remotely close to that. And then I was typical property addict, like every night, 1 a.m., looking at like realestate.com, getting into that. Yep. And then just slowly kept chipping away. And it was a little bit easier back then with serviceability. We didn't have the same kind of APRA lending restrictions.
So 2018, of course, yeah, lucky.
Yeah, little bit corrupt almost. You could literally go to the bank and buy it 20% below market value. They'll value it 10% above market value, pull out the equity and kind of go again. And then just kept chipping away and bought like up in Foster and Brisbane and kind of some regional cash flow properties in Cairns even.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think I had about 8 properties. And at work,
are these all established homes or all townhouses, units?
No units. Yep. 2 townhouses, the rest established homes.
Okay.
The townhouses were literally just because I couldn't afford a house in the area that I wanted and being like really like aggressive, like, oh, I got to buy, what can I buy with $32,000 kind of thing? You're looking, you're like, oh, I can find. They haven't performed as well as the houses, but they haven't been bad. Like I've got a.
So
like,
I've still stored
a couple of them.
Yep.
Like one of them in Brisbane, I think I bought for $180,000 in Waterford. It's like in the Logan kind of council.
Yep.
That's valued at about $350,000. Like it's not it's not as impressive as, say, like the Blacktown one that's now worth 650, 700, but it's still had an okay outcome.
Okay.
But again, you buy what you can afford at the time. So if I had sat there doing nothing for 2 years because I was saving for a house, I would have missed out on a little bit of capital growth. Mm-hmm. And then at work, I was sort of known as the property guy. Like, I literally had the CEO popping into my office once a week, sitting down for an hour chatting property.
Yeah,
and then I started like buying for a couple mates and then friends of friends. And then I saw an ad for another buyer's agent who was just started at the time. That was just, they had one employee and I went, oh, cool, let's give this crack for a year.
Mm-hmm.
Budgeted enough knowing I was taking a pay cut to basically survive a year, learn the craft, and I was going to go back to engineering.
Yeah.
And then the company I was with just kept growing and they had like 20, 30 staff when I left a few years ago.
Did you ever think about, you obviously went into commercial straight up, or that company transitioned into commercial, but did commercial ever cross your mind? Like, you probably know now, correct me if I'm wrong, but you probably know now for more so the commercial side of it, commercial buyer's agency. There's not too many out there. I feel like you're one of the main key figures in that space. But when did sort of commercial come into it? And
so the buyer's agency I started with was a cash flow residential buyer's agency. They hadn't started commercial, touched commercial for a few years. So I've actually got like 800 residential properties under my belt now for clients.
Oh,
so
yeah, okay.
So I
thought you meant for you, and I'm like,
nah, we'll talk about that. That's anyone who's doing that is very like,
they're
very insecure if they've got that many properties.
Yeah,
So we started buying that, and then I was like everyone else with commercials, like too high risk, doesn't have capital growth, going to sit there vacant for long periods, and then just because of the work, we had some high net worth clients, and we dipped our toe in, and then once we actually started looking into it, we're like, this can't be right. Like, how can you get like, well, at the time, this is like 2017 when we kind of started buying commercial, you're getting like 9-10% net yields. So you buy $1 million property and you're talking like 35, 40 grand a year positive, like, because interest rates are low at the time. And I'm like, there's something wrong here. What am I missing? And then we kept buying them and kept buying them. And then they started growing as well. And we're like, okay, this is actually a game changer. But to answer your question with the commercial, I'm known as commercial because I wrote my commercial book first.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a bit easier to break through the social media noise because there's 1,000 resi buyers out there. Weirdly enough, even though I wrote my book word for word, I wrote a residential one because I actually got sick of people thinking I was the commercial guy. Not so much because I don't want to do commercial, but I want people to feel like I'm not giving them biased advice. Like people will come to me and they're like, oh, yeah, I'm going to use you for commercial and then I'm going to use another buyer's agent for residential. And I'm like, look, I'm going to tell you to buy a residential if I think you should buy a residential. I don't want to be known as the guy who pushes commercial. I want to be known as the guy who tells people buy commercial when you're right and when you're ready for it.
Mm-hmm. What's your opinion of when someone should be buying commercial? I mean, obviously it's going to be subject to what their property goals are, but like when in the property journey would you say is the best time to be buying and leveraging into commercial?
Yeah, so you've sort of alluded to it. It comes down to like what your goals are. So like what you're trying to achieve over what time frame versus what you've got to work with. And that means like obviously like borrowing capacity and things like that. So like I normally answer this question with when you shouldn't buy a commercial.
Mm-hmm.
So when you shouldn't buy a commercial is when you've got a bigger borrowing capacity with residential, because you can get away with like 90% loans for a commercial. So if you're a 20-year-old kid and you've got bank of mum and dad to fall back on, I would rather go leverage up, pay lender's mortgage insurance, get three residentials on 90% loans versus one commercial on a 70% loan, because if we get the same capital growth, you're going to make three times as much, which means we can then buy a commercial that's three times the size down the track.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, you won't have the same cash flow, but we'll have more net wealth to play with down the track. Whereas, like you said, if you come to me and you're a 63-year-old, I don't know, couple, and you're like, oh, we want to retire in 2 years' time, buying a negatively geared residential is not the way forward. Yeah, like that's not going to, so it's commercial there. But normally you'll be pushed into it. The big bulk of the bell curve is people run into serviceability issues with residential because you can only borrow 5 to 10 times your income.
Mm-hmm.
Commercial has lease doc loans. Even the property looks after itself on a full doc loan. So you can kind of push the envelope a little bit further with commercial when compared to residential.
Even under your own name, or is that more so with different types of structures?
It depends. A trust and a personal name, they still look at your income and your outgoings and your expenses and things like that. Basically, all the banks do is shading. So they'll look at your portfolio and they'll go, okay, we'll slap on 1.5 to 3% extra interest rates. We'll do principal and interest, even if you're on interest only.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll take 80% of the rent. So they take 20% off. So if you've got, let's say, a neutrally geared residential property and you do that, it goes negative 15 grand or 20 grand a year in their eyes. So hence why after two or three properties, they go, no, no, you're done. You can't afford more than 60 grand negative. Mm. With commercial, say it's, I don't know, 20 grand positive and you do that, it goes to like, say, neutral.
Yep.
So you can keep pushing the envelope a little bit. It doesn't add to your serviceability. People think that if you have a positively geared property, it adds to it.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't add per se, because when you do that criteria, it might be neutral or negative, but it doesn't take away the same.
Okay. So it's not necessarily your borrowing capacity stepping down, stepping down, stepping down. It's almost as if it's the same, right?
Yeah, effect, assuming you're buying, but it's hard to say, because every time I have one of these conversations, interest rates are a bloody percent higher.
Yep.
So then all of a sudden, slightly different conversation, but it's just not going to take away. When they do your serviceability, it's not going to be having something 20 grand negative in their eyes. It's going to be, say, neutral.
Mm-hmm.
So you can just get that extra one or two properties. But then with commercial, because you've got a lower LVR, typically, it'll then service itself better. So if you start dropping to 70%, then that property becomes 30 grand positive, and then it's positive in their eyes. Then you can look at things like lease stock loans, where it's a loan based on the length of the lease. So it just gives you more options for moving forward.
Can you pay LMI on a I haven't bought commercial property before, obviously very curious. Can you buy, if I want to buy a commercial property, can I pay LMI and bump that LVR up, it's got to be about 70%?
80%. So 80%. There's a few lenders like ANZ, Suncorp, BOQ, Liberty, they're doing 80% loans at the moment.
Okay.
For business owners at the moment, St. George and Westpac are doing 100% loans.
Talk to me about that.
Basically, it's to cover like doctors and things like that have been getting it for God knows how long. Mm-hmm. But it's for business owners to like, say someone like me, to avoid Mr. Taxman, you might pay yourself a small salary.
Mm-hmm.
So if I want to buy $1 million commercial property on a 70% LVR, very hard to save $350K to buy under my personal name,
mm-hmm.
even though the business might be making decent money kind of thing. So it's to cover the business owners where they know you're not going to have the capital, but you can leverage against the business.
Okay.
Obviously, there's terms and conditions and stuff that apply, but that only got released a couple of weeks ago, but that's really powerful for some business owners.
Okay, so that's more so like business owners.
But only business owners.
For the normal sort of couple or person that's out there, that's probably not going to be something they're able to lean into and utilize. Okay, so run me through sort of commercial. Well, actually, before we jump into that, where does your sort of portfolio sit, and where are your goals? Do you have an end goal? Do you have a finished goal? Where are you sort of sitting at the moment?
Mine actually changes literally every year, because my life's also been quite sinusoidal the last kind of 10 years as well. Because like when you're an engineer, you're striving for 200K, and then I was striving for a 50K passive income.
Mm-hmm.
Then you get that 50K passive income, and then it goes to 100K. Then I joined a buyer's agency, and it was like, okay, let's try to earn 100K through work.
Mm-hmm.
And then the property portfolio kept growing, because obviously the market's been really kind to a lot of people the last 10 years.
Yep.
And then as when I went out on my own 3 years ago, it was like, cool, let's just do a client a month. I'm kind of a bit more, how do I say this? A bit more humble, I'd say, than a lot of people. I don't have big goals anymore. I'm actually not going to keep buying lots of properties.
Mm-hmm.
Next goal is to buy the principal place of residence in Sydney on the Northern Beaches. I want my house.
Northern Beaches. You sure about that?
Sorry,
mate. Gosh. Okay.
I've got a good budget,
yep.
But get that paid off in 5 years' time,
mm-hmm.
and then start reducing LVR and debt. So
on everything else.
Yeah.
What sort of that number that you're sitting at investment-wise?
Oh, what have I got? Like 12 properties now.
Mm-hmm.
$5 to $8 million, but my PPOR is going to be $5 to $8 million as well.
Yeah,
so it's kind of doubling. Yeah.
And is the goal when you leverage into your PPR is to have the portfolio paying in terms of like mortgages and stuff like that, or you know,
partially. I enjoy my passive income mm-hmm. quite a lot. Like I've done 15 countries in the last 2 years.
Yeah.
But that's also why like I'm still doing business, for instance, and still working fairly hard, is to help kind of attribute that. So the business income is a big portion of that as well.
Okay. And let's touch on that a little bit now. So you've sort of been able to, and I know you were living overseas for a bit. I like to do in-person podcasts. I think it's just better for me and you to be able to chat, for people to be able to see us. You've done some time. You've done a lot of time overseas in a few different places, like over the last couple of years. Talk to me about a few of the places you've stayed, how long, and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so I left my last company because it kind of got to COVID, and like, no offense, like I was making good money. It was a good place to work,
mm-hmm.
but because it got really big, it kind of felt corporate again. It was mm-hmm. just doing sales calls all day, every day, and then me and my partner was like, look, we've got a passive income. Why don't we actually go and enjoy it? So we planned just to do 6 to 12 months because I was going to start my own business and I had the books coming out and things like that. And then I found the time difference actually weirdly helped with business because all of a sudden I'm available from 1 p.m. till midnight. And guess when most families and couples want to chat?
Like after hours.
Yeah, after hours. So conversion rate was like 80% at the time because like you get both the couple like in the relationship on the call and they can put the kids down and they get that. Whereas when you do like a lunchtime call with someone, they go home and they say, oh, I spoke to this bearded guy who's promised me 100K passive income.
Yeah.
And the partner's just like, no chance. Like, what are you doing, company? So conversion went really well. And then as I started hiring people, because I was away half the day, I had to have really good systems and processes. So my CRM's perfect. Like engineering wise, like I reckon I've got the most like foolproof system in all of the buyer's agencies. Like everything is like automated and ticked off and there's templates and it's all easy to do.
Yeah.
So it actually forced me to run my business like a business.
Mm-hmm.
And that was probably the main benefit. But yeah, just been for the last 2.5 years, just been kicking around from everywhere from the UK. I've done 15 countries, so like Iceland, Spain.
And how long are you staying at a, living at a, like staying in, are you traveling or are you settling down for like 6 or 12 months?
For now or for
previously? Like previously what you've done?
No, so we had a base in the UK, so in London, well not London, actually Brighton.
Yeah, I think I heard that you were in the UK last time.
So we had a base there, but then every 2 weeks we'd go away for anywhere between 3 days and 2 weeks. Kind of thing.
And how long were you in the UK for?
2.5 years.
2.5 years.
Yeah. So all my whole business has grown since being over there. Now we've got like 15 staff and actually got my boat party tomorrow.
Wow. Trav, did you get an invite to the boat party? Yeah. If you need a videographer.
Sorry.
Wow, didn't get an invite. Maybe we'll have to clip that one. Thanks a lot, Steve. Okay, so 2.5 years. Yep. And then now you've come back. What sort of brought you back? You're settling in Northern Beaches of all places.
So the plan was to go do a really cool, fun 2 years prior to having kids.
Yep.
And then we'd like, all right, let's start having kids. And this is what, like, we've got a 5-month-old now. So 5 months plus 9 months ago. Yep. We're like, let's start for kids.
Yeah.
Started trying for kids. And then 3 weeks later, we're pregnant. So that kind of called an end to the trip. So we came back here because like my mum's passed away and that, and we've got like friends and family on the Northern Beaches. So just culture wise and having support, we came back to the Northern Beaches. We're still going to travel though. We're still going to, I don't know, go overseas every single year. We actually bought in the UK. So we've got an Airbnb in the UK, which is going to be our base. So I still want to do 3-4 months every year over there. Mm-hmm. Not so much, no offense to the UK, to be in the UK, but it's a great base point to go skiing in France and Italy and sit on a beach in Greece and things like that. So we've got that base. And then that's the plan. And next step for me is buy a really cool camper and do the big loop around Australia with bubs and at least until up in school age, because I know up until then you don't really have any limitations.
Yeah.
After that, you're kind of locked into the 12 weeks a year.
All right. So you're really enjoying your travel and stuff like that. What's the next for Polisi Property? I mean, you've got 15, you've got a team of sort of like 10 or 15 people, you're saying. How are you tracking? How are you tracking there? You want to blow it? What's your goals and ambitions with that?
Whenever I get asked this question, I don't actually know because when I started this business, I was literally going to be like, I'm going to do a property a month just for some close clients and move on. And then it's just organically got bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
I don't want to have another huge company. I don't want to be doing 50 properties a month kind of thing because the more properties you do per month, you're not happier. Yes, you make more money, but more money is more problems a lot of times as well because you've got more staff, more issues, more clients to worry about. So I think we're going to kind of cap it where we are.
Mm-hmm.
And no offense to the people watching and listening. If the interest keeps building up, I'll probably just increase the fees to limit supply.
Yeah, so, okay. Yeah, supply and demand.
Yeah.
Perfect. Okay, and then maybe you have a wait list or something like that to keep people on.
You say, this is a hard thing with business because like you said, you're asking the goals, but I'm not getting happier whether I earn 300 grand or whether I earn $1 million a year.
Yep.
It's not changing my life anymore. It's enough to travel around the world full time. So what's the purpose of doing it?
Yeah.
I want really good team culture and fun. And that's why like every like month we're doing a team day and then every 3 months we're going to go away together for a few days.
Oh, really?
So I want work to be, because most people, they fill their bucket outside of work. They're like, oh, I'm going to travel. I'm going to have fun. I'm going to have a family and that. If you can get the work part as well for 8 hours a day being the fun part that you really enjoy, that's how I think you're winning at life.
Okay, cool. Interesting. So tell me a bit about Is all your staff, do you have an office or everyone's working from home?
No formal office. We do the once a week catch up and like the kind of corporate, like WeWork type ones.
Yeah.
And then every couple of weeks, like I said, we meet up for like a social thing and then every month we're going to do that. That's all started since I got back a couple months ago though. Prior to that, everyone was kind of working like just from home.
Remote. And you're cool with everyone working and working from home and stuff like that?
As long as they're happy. I always get people to say, oh, don't you worry, they're going to bludge. And I'm like, no, because we're too busy to bludge. And I can see how many deals and how many emails are coming through. And if they want to bludge, as long as they're happy, like I'm not. Why do you need someone working 9 hours a day, 100%? If someone gives, if they're really happy and they give a solid 7 hours a day, weirdly, everyone in my team came from a different industry from property, because who do you really hire unless you're going to poach someone from another buyer's agency?
Yeah, true.
I don't want to get, no offense to real estate agents, I love real estate, but like they're a bit of a different breed because they're about getting the sale done at all times. So I've got like a solicitor in my team. Valuer, two engineers, and gym owner, like just people that think, but weirdly, and this is just kind of organically happened, is everyone's got kids and they love the flexibility that they go to their swim class at 10 a.m. And then like, so I lose everyone from about 8:30 till 10, then again at 3:30 till 5, but then, then people come back on kind of like 6, 7 p.m. and kind of work there. So it's really flexible. But what I actually find, if you work from home 100% of the time, unless you have some form of culture or social interaction, work gets a bit stale. Like everyone can say, oh, you can love your job. But if you're doing the same thing after 6, 8 weeks, you start going, oh, this is, I'm a bit bored here. And that's actually what I found in the last company during COVID, because.
Yeah, during COVID, I feel like everyone's.
I was literally sitting in my office at home, just staring at the same wall, doing the same conversation 10 times a day. And that was actually, I enjoyed it more when I was in the office, because between calls, you'd have a bit of a nonsense talk with the employees and find out what they're up doing. And so I'm very conscious of that, to like moving forward. For the staff to enjoy it, there needs to be some human interaction with it.
Do you think there's ever going to be a full-time office or anything like that? Or you just think the events and stuff?
We'll have a 1 day or 2 8 day a week office that you can go into, and it's like non-compulsory. We'll make it like maybe like once a month you kind of come in and everyone flies in. But I got staff in Brisbane and Melbourne and stuff like that, so we'll see how we go.
Interesting. I think you're on the front of the wave with building an environment like that. If people are happy where they work, the work's going to be better, and just given that flexibility, I think that's something that really came out during COVID and stuff like that. Look, I think we can wrap up here. I'm really I'm thankful you come on. I've got a really good understanding of Steve Polisi, sort of how we start and how he's grown and built Polisi Property. If anyone's listening wants to tune in to watch, listen to, or read any of Steve's content, I'll put all the links of it in the show notes. And you know, you guys are more than welcome. He's in the resi side. He's in the commercial side. You've got a YouTube channel that as well you're posting very regularly on. To be able to see the man in the flesh and the beard. But look, Steve, appreciate you coming on and coming out to the Everything Property Podcast.
Legend, man. Thanks for having me on.
Too easy.